From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
All right, so far we've been talking about computer printers and insects in the newsroom. We'll see if we can do better for this week's opportunity on The Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Sir?
How are you, Rex? It's always wonderful to be here with you.
Thank you so much. Likewise, I'm sure. Here's Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher, now emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Mr. Rex, how are you? How's everybody?
Well, you know, the day is young. We'll see. Barbara Lombardo, for many years, the editor of the Saratogian in Saratoga Springs. How you doing?
Good morning.
Now, a professor, she is indeed. She's teaching and...
Longtime colleague of mine.
That's true. You guys work for the same...
Well,
and I
for the same
in
company.
Your, in your company as well.
Yeah, but we never crossed paths. You didn't want anything to do with Kingston, I think.
No, actually, you weren't at the time that I was the editor of The Record in Troy. Neither of your papers were owned by
that
company.
Oh, that's correct. Yes.
I happened to be a witness. Alan, you'll appreciate this, having been a witness to bad news. I happened to be in the room when Ira got the word. He was then the president of the State Publishers Association, that his newspaper had been bought by Journal Register Company, which fate later befell you as well, Barbara. And you looked so glum.
Well, I was introducing a panel. It was right here in downtown Albany. Mm-hmm. And I basically said, I'm Ira Fussfeld, chairman of the association. I'll see you later. I've got to go down and tell my staff that the paper was just sold.
Yeah.
And I came back at night for dinner.
To the worst company in American journalism. So anyway, that's just an editorial.
Yes, there are a lot of contenders, but it was among the top five. But,
all right. And you survived and lived to tell the story. So we're offering you an opportunity to listen to some commentary, insight, analysis. In this past week, as you're listening to it, there's been an interesting outpouring of opinion by perhaps 300 newspapers across the country who have written editorials seeking to push back against the Trump administration, taking a crack at the president's characterization of journalism as enemies of the people, publishing editorials on that same topic in All on Wednesday. One day. What do you think of this?
Well, Rex, I wanted to ask you a question. You know, you're the editor of a major paper in this part of New York State. Did you do it?
We did not.
How come?
Well, I'll explain why a little later. I want to know what other people thought first.
I think unusual times go for unusual measures. Ordinarily, I would not be in favor of this. I don't like the concept of a coordinated effort to print editorial opinions, even ones that we agree with. But I'd like to think that that decision can be reached by each editorial board. But the degree to which Trump has gone after journalists and journalism, at least in this case, makes me change my mind and say this was something that had to be done.
And Ira, it puts reporters, I think that the one convincing argument for me is that reporters are put into the crosshairs of people who would hurt them.
Well, that's the case anyway, particularly under the Trump administration.
Barbara, what do you think?
I could argue both ways. I agree with Ira, bottom line, that it's dangerous to say nothing and that this shouldn't be a weekly or a monthly thing, but the idea of speaking out together, I think, is a good one. I worry that it's really not going to change anybody's mind, that it could actually have the opposite effect of having people saying, see, they're all against Trump. They don't want to give him a fair shot. So I thought what you did, Rex, this morning was you had an editorial that took Trump to task for not releasing his tax returns. Is that correct? But the focus was really about accountability, which applies to all sides.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see newspapers continue to write editorials that tackle the topics that the Trump administration is doing harm to the country.
Well, our point of view was, just to answer Alan's question, we decided not to do it. We argued both sides. We really did. And the fact is, we have published editorials saying this in the past. I've written several columns on this very topic on the peril to our First Amendment and therefore to all of us as a result of the president's scurrilous attacks on the press. But we thought that having all of these newspapers making this statement all at the same time would fuel the president's notion that we're all in cahoots against him. He would then be able to say, see, see, it's the media. They're all against me. It's just they're all political.
And they're all of one. You've argued many times, Rex, here, that when you say the media, it is the media. It's a whole bunch of different entities. And this goes to prove that point.
I was wondering whether Hearst weighed in on that at all as a company.
It's not the kind of thing we do. You know, two of our papers, I think Houston and San Antonio published editorials. Connecticut, we own most of the papers in Connecticut, did not, and San Francisco did not, and Albany did not. I will say, however, we do plan to have an editorial on this very topic in the next few days. So it's not as though we're going to be doing it. We're not abandoning the topic by any means. I consider it to be just about the most important issue that we're confronting, because I think the First Amendment is at the core of all of our freedoms, and the president's attacks on the press are really undermining support for the First Amendment in general.
And if you take a look at every fascist movement that has ever happened in the world, totalitarian movement, it's always been we have to control the press. So you're right, Rex. No question that this is something that people should check in on.
Well, I was going to say it is not unusual in my experience for there to be a call collectively from newspapers to write editorials that impact our industry. I'm thinking specifically about the New York Press Association, which often sends out advisories saying this bill is lingering in Albany. It would be a good idea. It'd be very helpful if you wrote an editorial about it. But it was never more than just an alert, and people could choose to write or not. Now, again, people could choose or not to write about this Boston Globe initiative, but it was a more specific, publicized, coordinated effort than what I described previously.
So, yeah, I remember that as well. So say the legislature in New York State is talking about cameras in the courtroom, and that's an issue that all newspapers would want to editorialize about, so the New York Publishers Association would, New York News Publishers Association.
Yeah, I got the name wrong. I can never remember what it's called now.
They would then send out these alerts that Ira is talking about, and you could choose to write editorials, which is kind of different, but it's a timely reminder.
Yeah, the difficulty is that none of these editorials, I'm afraid, are going to change anybody's mind. We see that no steps that anybody points out about Donald Trump dissuade his most ardent admirers. And so certainly I don't think people are going to be persuaded that they should care about this. That shouldn't stop us from trying, certainly.
Well, I think it could have an impact in red states, in Trump land, if a mostly sycophantic Trump newspaper editorial page spoke up about this, because it impacts them, you know, the whole notion of we're the enemy of the people. I think it would have some impact if a right-wing newspaper said, no, we're not the enemy.
But they don't. The only major newspaper that endorsed Donald Trump was the Las Vegas Review-Journal, which is owned by Sheldon Adelson, his longtime financial backer. And newspaper editorials didn't make any difference in those red states. You know, even the Chicago Tribune didn't endorse Donald Trump. Anyway, it's a very frustrating thing. What's most terrifying is that almost 30% of Republicans believe that the president ought to be allowed to shut down media outlets who he doesn't like. Now, you can argue that the numbers of Republicans are shrinking so much, that's a smaller percentage of Americans. It's not the Republican Party that we remember from our youth, which was a powerful force. But still, a huge number of Americans think that it's okay, to Alan's point about this being the step toward totalitarianism. A lot of Americans think that it's okay for a president to be able to shut down critical media.
And let's remember, Rex, who his most admired people are. They're the strongmen around the world who are doing exactly that. You're not getting a fair, balanced way of looking at the news in Russia anymore. You're certainly not getting it in the Philippines with Duterte. And so we pretty well know what he wants to do, and it is frightening. I had an interesting thing happen here at Public Radio this week, and that was all of a sudden the Republican Party doesn't seem to want to talk to us anymore.
Really?
Well, yeah, we have a weekly program called The Capital Connection. I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but I wrote a personal column that appeared in a number of newspapers saying that it really wasn't about whether you liked John Faso, who was running in the 19th congressional district, or not. It was about one house of the Congress being able to hold Trump accountable. And whether it's cause and effect, and whether I'm just being a little bit sensitive about this, we couldn't get a telephone call answered about being on the air with us this week. So go figure that one
from
out.
Any officials, from any Republican officials?
That's right. We have a program called the Capital Connection. Mm-hmm. It is a statewide program, and you get a fair play, and you get to be on for a half an hour on every public radio station in the state. And all of a sudden, nothing doing.
So as a political scientist, not even as a broadcaster, how do you analyze that as a decision, if in fact it was a thoughtful decision on their part?
Well, one and one makes two, so that's the way I see it. It may be wrong. I may not be right about it. However, as a political scientist who specializes in media, they've come to a decision, which is if Andrew Cuomo makes a mistake and he said America has never been all that great and we can handle him on that and we put out a press release, but we don't want to be caught talking for half an hour at a time, full length.
That's a shame because I've heard you talk to both Republicans and Democrats on that Capital Connection, and I think that you're fair and even-handed with all the candidates and polite.
That's very
same
nice
thing with Congressional Corner. You bring on people of both parties. It would be really bad news if you find that there's some pushback on that, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, maybe I'm just being oversensitive, but...
No.
Yeah.
Well, I would want to know. I mean, I saw that or heard that you couldn't get Stefanik or Stefanik if you're the president.
Yes.
That you couldn't get Stefanik to come on.
No, what she does, she's very clever. She announces that she'll come on and she gives you a date a couple of months in advance. And just before she's supposed to come on, we hear that she can't make it, but she'll be coming on in the future. So that's her way of dealing with it. So, you know, that's just the way some people do it. Now, FASO has always been good, and we've given them, you know, not only time on the statewide programming and on our Congressional Corner, but he has been given an hour at a time to answer people's questions over the air. And still, he's not a happy camper right now. I know that. And look, it's a very close race.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this is the Media Project, and if you have some thoughts on any of the issues we're talking about, please feel free to share them with us. media@wamc.org is our email address. Alan Chartok, Barbara Lombardo, Ira Fussfeld, and I'm Rex Smith, and we are talking about media issues. You know, as local news outlets are feeling the pain of financial cuts to the number of people we have in our newsrooms. The result is that a lot of communities actually are becoming news deserts in the same way that there are food deserts where grocery stores don't serve. And the result is there have been some online-only news outlets that are rising up, that are taking the place of vanishing newspapers. And it's really interesting to point out that the wildfires out in the West have yielded some great interest in some of these things. For example, the Mendocino Voice, which has been launched by some former newspaper reporters, has been updating residents almost around the clock. And they've gone from about 15,000 people in their audience to now about 76,000 for wildfire coverage. Same thing around California, the Lake County News. This is happening all over by independent digital-only outlets that operate on a small budget. It is a little bit of encouraging news that you see.
Do you have that in just this market in the Capital District?
Well, the closest that I've seen to it actually happened during the flooding following, was it Irene or whoever? Remember the watershed?
Terrible storm.
Yeah, the terrible storm. So down in the Hudson Valley, the watershed times.
Well, that's true. We coordinated with them on that. So you don't know of any similar kind of operation
which,
up here?
No, not so much. Which, by the way, has now since, I believe, folded because it's just very difficult to keep that kind of thing going.
Yes. Now, it is interesting because I've watched when this stuff happens. I try to read the New York Times several times each night. I wake up and I read it, but it doesn't change. The New York Times is pretty much what it's going to be the next morning on the front page. On the other hand, if you go to CNN, they're keeping you going at that moment. So the idea that who would figure out how to give you contemporary news all night long is a daunting one.
Well, I know that the New York Times does have somebody working what we used to call the graveyard shift to continually update their site. And the reason I know that is because my nephew used to do that job in New York, but they have now sent it to their bureaus in Europe, presumably so that the New York people don't have to work overnight. And the technology obviously allows it to happen. But I still have a hard time getting my arms around this concept. And maybe it's because I'm an old man. But I don't understand how these places, such as the ones that you described, stay in business. Are they in it for the fun of it? Are they, I mean, at some point in time, somebody's got to pay the bill. There still has to be people writing and editing this stuff. I don't get it. There's a piece missing in my head.
Well, to Rex's point, I guess there are organizations that are bubbling up, such as the national nonprofit organization called Lion. I forget what it stands for.
That's the one that Matt DiRienzo runs,
right?
A former colleague of ours.
They're seeking grants and sponsorships to underwrite the cost of doing business. And I think that the article about that talked about how we really need to rely on the local communities to step up and to support their local coverage. And I call that highly optimistic. even the wildfires, the coverage has grown tremendously, but once those fires are out, and hopefully that's not too far off, you know, how are you going to support that? It's a terrible conundrum.
Well, it is. It's difficult, and I think that the only solution is not-for-profit funding, getting foundations. Lion, for example, the coordinator, the umbrella organization you're referring to, is funded by the Poynter Institute and by other grants. We at Hearst, my company, has found that trying to have a commercial enterprise that is digital only for local news is really difficult. We took the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. When that, as a print product, failed to be able to compete against the Seattle Times, it became just seattlepi.com, and that has shrunk and shrunk, and it's now just a few reporters. So
is that because of advertising revenue, Rex?
Yeah, there's not enough ad revenue, and the subscription base, the people who are willing to pay for the product, is just not there. We find this, of course, we now have what's called a dynamic paywall. That is, if people start to access our news a lot, we'll ask them to pay for it. And people complain all the time, hey, that's always been free. How come you're making me pay for it? Well,
well, that's one of the big mistakes that the newspaper industry made at the outset of this whole process, which was giving stuff away for free. There was no individual or collective plan other than seeing that the internet had been born and we ought to have a piece of it. And so we started throwing our content up for free. And as you point out, once you're giving it away for free, it's awfully hard to get money for it.
Hey, Ira, as the old saying goes, hindsight stinks.
Absolutely.
So what would you have done? What should you have
done? Knowing what I know now is that if I was to start a print newspaper in 1920, I would never think of giving it away for free. If I was starting a digital operation at the dawn of the digital industry, you'd have to put a price tag. You can't give your work away for free and expect to survive long term.
Well, and going back further, when you see the internet is coming, you can't be so arrogant and think that advertisers are always going to need you. We needed to create our own Craigslist and our own real estate advertising.
There was a complete underestimation of the impact of competitive digital media, and Craigslist is point A. I can remember going to a publisher's meeting in the 80s, and Dave Mack, who was then the publisher in Rochester, said, you guys ought to be all concerned about Craigslist because they're going to take our classified advertising. And we said, nobody's going to take our classified advertising. That's our bread and butter. That's something we can do. My newspaper used to run upwards of 20 pages of classified ads on Sundays, and now they have about a page and a half, and that includes house ads, which we don't get any money for. So when they write the great history, as you say, Alan, the great history of the newspaper industry, this is going to be an era of missed opportunities and bad choices.
I'm not so sure. I don't know that it could have gone that way. You know, since Alan is usually the contrarian here, I'll try to be at this point. I don't know that we could have gotten ourselves onto the web and built the audience that we have if we hadn't been free from the outset. The point was that we needed to get out there and build the audience that we could then monetize, as we're trying to do now. You know, TimesUnion.com is by far the most significant news site in this greater capital region in upstate New York, and that is because we put it all out there. It's because we've been very aggressive in trying to build that audience. So now we're trying to monetize it a little bit better. I just don't know that we could have monetized it first without the audience being there.
And yet, to be fair, Rex, my good friend, who I respect so much.
Here it comes.
I remember as this was happening, you were struggling with this. I mean, you had to make up your mind how you wanted to do it. Was it going to be free? Were you going to make it pay for
it? We all went back and forth. Sure. We all were struggling with it. We didn't know what was the right way. We've all experimented. It's a new media. We are at the dawn of the internet age still, you know, and nobody's quite sure.
Well, you'll recall that those of us who did not have paywalls believed that the more people we attracted to the site would provide a metric that we could show the advertisers, and that the advertiser revenue was what was going to be brand new and sustainable. And to my knowledge, it has not happened.
Back to the Craigslist for a moment. You know, I think you guys may be crying in your beer. And what I mean by that is I drive a Prius. It gets me to work in the morning. It gets me sometimes, as of this morning, 67 miles per gallon. That is unbelievable. Now, you know, you can either buy a car that's going to get you 20, 25 miles a gallon. Otherwise, the innovation has happened. The train has left the station. Craigslist has eaten your lunch, as you say. And there may not be any taking it back.
There's probably not. I think the problem is that what we failed to account for is simple economics, and that is the inventory was overwhelming. That is, there was so much supply of advertising available, unlimited, in fact, that we no longer had the control of the marketplace that newspapers used to have, and that drives down the price, of course, of anything, as any economist can tell you. So the result is that internet advertising is so cheap, and the ability to present it to people, the barrier to entry in the marketplace is so low. Anybody can put an internet ad out there. You don't have to buy a big expensive press the way you used to for print advertising. So the economics of it are just not what they used to be.
And on top of that, you can get what you think is news from any number of sources.
What you think is news.
Yeah, you know, Rexy, looking at your tie, which is very expensive, I can guarantee that because I know about ties.
Thank you.
I
always appreciate when Alan comments on my sartorial approach.
He's an expert.
Style.
Yeah, but there's something coming, of course. And that is that I'm not going to stand out on the corner with a tin cup for you, because I know that your newspaper, despite the fact that, you know, this is a tough time, is still making money.
Right. Thank goodness.
Yeah, well, that's my point. I'm not objecting to it. I just think things are different.
Well, I'm not privy to their books, but they're not making nearly as much money as they once were. And you look at a flow chart, and if the revenue and profit is going this way, how much longer will they be making?
As my wonderful publisher, George Hurst, says, no margin, no mission.
I used to use an inelegant comparison. I used to say, we're giving away all this content for free, and at some point in time, their people are going to be hooked on this content, just like they are on drugs, and then we're going to start charging, and they're going to have to buy it because they're hooked.
Well, that's happening.
That was the mantra when Ira and I were both part of the company that came out of bankruptcy and was renamed Digital First Media, and we were energized by that up in Saratoga at the time, saying, yes, that's how people are going to get the news. This is going to be our saving grace. And then there was instead blood all over the floor.
Well,
CEO warned.
Right. The mission made a lot of sense, but then the hedge fund got in the way and they decided they weren't making money fast enough.
Hey, I pay for the New York Times. I pay for the Washington Post. I pay for the Boston Globe.
God bless you.
You're the one.
All right. And with that point, thank you, Alan Chartok and Barbara Lombardo. And Ira Fussfeld, I'm Rex Smith. Thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
Startled poor old Sadie's on ting-a-ling-a-ling city desk. Hold the press, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling-ting-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and Troy Record. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.